everyone, and welcome to the Screen Strong Families podcast, bringing you the best solutions for parents who are serious about eliminating screen problems in their homes. This is Melanie Hempe, and if you're one of our regular listeners, welcome back. And if you're a new friend, we're so glad you found us. Welcome to Screen Strong. I hope you're doing well this week, and we hope that you are enjoying your visit here once a week with us on the podcast. We love bringing this content to you every week. We also know that you have a lot of questions, so please join our Connect Plus group on our site where we keep all the good stuff over there. We have a lot of videos and a lot of past workshops as well as Q&A webinars. And this is where Dr. Stacy and I and other Screen Strong ambassadors will be answering your questions. So you can get the link to that Connect Plus in the show notes to this podcast. So today we're going to talk about the social aspects of video games. I spoke with a mom last week who was telling me this very sad story of how her son doesn't have any friends, but he's a big gamer. She can't figure out why he's so lonely. And I suggested that perhaps it is because he's not spending any time really with his friends. And she argued and said, oh, no, he's spending time online. And then I spoke with another mom who said that she knows that games are bad for her son, and they're having all sorts of conflicts in their home, but she can't take away his video game because it is his only social outlet. And then I got an email from someone that said that her son chose to play Fortnite instead of doing Boy Scouts. He had decided to quit Boy Scouts so he could play more Fortnite because he had convinced his mom that he had more friends on Fortnite than he did in his scouting troop. And I know that COVID also opened the door for a lot of arguments around this. So the list goes on and on about how parents really believe that video games are providing social benefits for boys. And when I hear these stories, I do feel so bad because childhood is not designed to be lonely, which is what is happening. And that is the risk when we have our kids spend too much time on screens. But I also know that when boys spend the majority of their social time on video games, they don't even know what they're missing. They think they're being social, but they are not. And many kids today really are suffering from a friendless childhood. They keep trying to get their friend needs met on their screen, but it isn't working because screens were never meant to cultivate friendships. They are good for some maintenance, but not for building. And this is nothing new. Oh, so today we are so excited to bust this myth for you. As you know, our oldest son, Adam, was a gamer, and I know very well how this world of gaming works. I've written a lot about it, and I still get very emotional when I think about the drama and the trauma and all the conflict that we experience and that many families are experiencing when they are living with a gaming dependent child. And the issue of friendships is one of the fringe issues that you don't realize is not happening. You know, I always felt like Adam was really being social when he would leave the dinner table and go game for 5 hours. I thought, well, he's hanging out with his friends. And little did I know that we were really actually setting him up to have fewer friends. So today we have the perfect person to help us understand this topic, a psychiatrist and mom of four teens to help us unpack the pros and cons of boys trying to meet social needs on video games. Dr. Stacy, welcome back. We are so excited. When I called you about this, I was like, oh my gosh, we have to talk about this. And you're the perfect person because you see this in your practice all the time.
Hey, Melanie, thanks for having me back. Yes, this is something that we see all the time. And I'll tell you that, you know, most physicians, pediatricians, psychiatrists really kind of forget to ask about video games. And yeah. So once you really start asking, you uncover a whole host of things that are likely contributing to why these kids end up in our office.
So I want to, and especially boys, right? And I want to say, I'm so glad you just brought that up because the interesting thing about screens in general is that there are many universal truths that apply to both gaming and social media. But as a culture, it feels like we're spending a whole lot more time on social media, right? Because that's the stuff that's all in the news. But this is a crossover topic. It kind of applies to both video games and social media. But today, we're going to talk about how it applies to video games specifically for boys. I think it's sort of out of sight, out of mind. You know, Dr. Stacy, I always say that, you know, you never hear a drowning child. And that's how I feel about video games and boys. You know, for girls on social media, we hear and we see more drama and more problems. But for boys, it's the secret underwater kind of event that's happening, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we don't. We're actually seeing more and more girls too.
Yeah. You mean they're playing video games?
Yes. I just had a sweet, sweet 17-year-old girl in my office last week who, after, you know, lots of discussion, we realized that her amount of time spent on Fortnite was unreal.
And
the way that it was sort of becoming part of the fabric of who she was in a negative way, and really working on, you know, trying to get away from that. So it's really one of those things that we don't think about, because we just think, oh, they're just playing games with their friends and it's really fun. Like when I was a kid, that's how we would think of a pickup soccer game in the neighborhood. And now
that's right.
You have video games in that way. But we really, as parents, need to dig deep and look at exactly what they're doing online and how this is affecting their growth and development.
So let's think back a second on our school years. You know, when I was thinking about this topic, I was thinking about my best friends when I was going through puberty, right? Or I was in fifth, sixth, seventh grade in high school. And those friendships were so critical to, you know, just making it through those years. I mean, I loved my mom and dad, and we had a lot of good relationships there, but my friends were really important. And I can't imagine growing up with no friends, because that's essentially what's happening. They're growing up with no real friends. Like, cause you know, we get energy from being around people in person, and you and I learned how to build those relationships, which was, you know, the best protective factor that could have happened during that time of development for us. That's where EQ is born. When you start figuring out how to be human almost, you know, and how to have empathy.
It's so interesting, because I think about boys and how we're losing all these boys. And you know this, and the listeners may know as well. My oldest child's a senior in high school. And so we've been doing all these college tours, right? So you go on the college tours and listen to the facts about the colleges. And almost every single one we've been to, it's 60% female and 40% male when you go to these schools. And the more you think about that, you're like, where are the boys? Like, what
I'll
are
tell
they
where they are?
And they're in their basement playing video games. And I'm not trying to make light of it, or, you know, I don't have the hard facts to show that that's what they're doing, but you get this sense of like, this is what's happening, is they're not out there, you know, with these face-to-face friendships and networking and building careers and, you know, doing all these things, because they're so sucked into this online video game world.
Yeah, they have left Earth, and I know this firsthand. It happened in my house, and I have my little book that is titled Will Your Gamer Survive College? And that is our story of exactly what happened to Adam. And I highly recommend that everybody get this and read it. It's very short. It's very easy to read. Read it to your boys. It is the virtual world, you know, is much more attractive. So, you know, and during that awkward stage of development, you know, we've heard before on this podcast, all the stories around how this happens and how boys get addicted. But what we haven't talked about that we're tackling today is this twisted truth that they're making friends. And I just want to talk a minute, Dr. Stacy, about what does being social really mean? Because I think so many parents are confused. And in my definition, social is actually being together, experiencing something together, not doing side-by-side play in a sandbox, which is basically what a video game is, but it's experiencing something new together, even just hanging out, watching a movie together and in person, you know, playing football, playing wiffle ball, talking on the phone, playing cards, all these things, fishing, hiking, experiencing things together that are in the real world. I mean, wouldn't you agree that that's what being social is?
Absolutely. You know, it's when you look at development of children, you know, like human development. You know, we start out being really dependent on our parents. Then we go to what's called parallel play, which you mentioned, like the two kids in the sandbox that are just keeping to themselves and playing only, you know, alone, but sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
And then once the brain really develops and you become, you know, more cognitively aware and your psychosocial development grows, you need these in-person interactions where you're looking at each other in the eye, you're reading body language, you're handling conflict, you can sense joy on the other person's face, you can, you know, do all these things. And there is not a way for that to convey on video games. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen. And so if you're doing all of this time commitment to these video games, you're losing out on all of these other things. So, you know, parents will say, well, that's the way my son, you know, interacts with his friends. Mm-hmm. Well, that's great and all, but that's not growing their brain. It's not, you know, we talk all the time about arborization and all of these new pathways that are building in your kids' brains, and the ones they don't use die off, you know,
right.
Use it or lose it phenomenon. And we want the in-person social pathways to grow.
We want those to be greater.
That's right. And spread and be cemented.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk all the time about how kids and teenagers' brains are like wet cement.
Yeah.
How they're, you know, they're almost there, but there's still a chance to make imprint on them. And so mm-hmm. we really need to, as parents, think twice about how much time our kids, especially boys, mm-hmm. are spending online gaming.
So what you're talking about is that sensitive period of development, that it's not forever. It's going to be there though for a very short, relatively short period of time between, you know, pre-puberty, pre-teen and the teenage years up through adolescence, that this toddler kind of parallel play, I'm so glad you brought that up with calling it parallel play. This is what toddlers do. And this is what I feel like, even when my son was in high school, and if I would even walk by and kind of see what he's doing on this game, it is very much a parallel situation. It is not like you're, you know, they say, oh, they're collaborating, they're doing all this. No, it's really not. It's halfway at best. And then what you just said about the urgency that parents have to feel. Like if you're listening and you don't understand after today, you're going to understand there is urgency behind this, that you can't just say, oh, well, he's fine. He's, you know, maybe not getting in trouble. He's not drinking. He's not, you know, driving crazy or whatever. He's fine. He's in his little cocoon down in the basement. He's fine. But what you have to realize, he's not fine. He is not taking advantage of this period of development that he has to take advantage of. And it includes being with people. You have to be with people. But I know that so many parents, me included, Dr. Stacy, we really think, and I used to really think, that he was getting his social needs met.
Right.
So let's just go through some things about why this is a myth. First of all, your teen is craving in-person time with you, and they're craving in-person time with their friends. They don't know how to articulate this.
Yeah, but you're not going to see that from them. And, you know, I have a 13-year-old boy, so we're right in the thick of it. And he loves to come in the house and go straight to his room. But really, they're doing that because they don't know
how they need help.
This. They're working through their emotions, their feelings, their hormone levels are changing. But at their core, these kids really want in-person time with their friends, with their siblings, with their parents.
Yeah.
And
it's awkward, right?
That's right. Yeah.
It's super awkward, but they're still craving it. It's like they know they have to do it, but it's hard. And oh, here's my video game. This is so much easier. Low effort, high reward, low effort, high reward. It's not awkward. Oh yeah, I can have a friend here. Oh, that feels like a friend. It feels like I'm making friends, but they are not making friends. And before we get started really on this whole long list that we have, the time consumption, right? The hours that they spend on their game, not engaging in real life social activities, is the whole downfall. It's a trade-off.
Well, and that's the number one thing that I spend time talking to parents, kids, patients, families, teachers about, is that you have to understand that time, there's a finite amount of time in a day. And if they are spending 4, 6, 8, 12 hours a day gaming, they're not spending 4, 6, 8, 12 hours a day interacting with you.
That's right.
A book, building something, doing a new skill, trying something hard, moving their body physically. I mean, they're all, it's a trade-off. And I think as parents, we need to sit and really meditate on that fact that we're taking the path of least resistance and letting them play these video games because that's what their brain is drawn to. But at times in parenting, you have to go against that. You mm-hmm. have to say, that's not good for them. Just like you're not going to let them eat Oreos for every single meal, not to pick on Oreos, but
right.
you know, whatever it is, unhealthy food for every single meal, because you have to do the right thing for their body and we have to do the right thing for their brain.
But once parents can understand it, that's why I love doing this podcast today, because this is one of the myths that I had no idea when I was very well educated, gone to nursing school. Like I knew all, but I didn't understand. I thought it was a perfect replacement and it wasn't. It's, you're getting gypped. It's a cheat. It's not real. It's not a perfect replacement for friends, but I don't think kids understand the difference between like what a gaming friend is and an acquaintance, somebody they've never even met possibly, and what a meaningful friendship is. I think it's really important for kids to know the progression of how to move from meeting someone, then they're a friend, then you spend time, because the research says it takes over 200 hours of in-person time to make that person a friend, right?
Yes.
A good friend. So they don't understand that. They think that their acquaintances that they meet, who even they think is a 14-year-old boy, could be a 50-year-old man. They don't even know. They think those are their friends, and how sad that is, because we're not bringing them through the progression of how they understand how to make a friend, how to troubleshoot problems, how to do conflict resolutions. You know, right. In a video game, if you don't like somebody, you just stop playing with them and play with somebody else. You never resolve the conflict.
Well, and that's the thing, is that we have to teach our kids what it means to be a friend, because unlike in the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, you know, mm-hmm. years ago, that was modeled to us as
right.
we developed, and more common now as time goes on, that sort of type of friendship that is rich and deep and meaningful is not being modeled. And so
yeah.
these kids, they come home from school, they get on their video games, they play their video games with all these acquaintances. Then they get up the next day and they go to school and it's just a bunch of strangers because they're not engaging with each other in ways that are meaningful and sort of growing these important friendships. And so as parents, we have to educate our kids about this.
Yeah.
Talk to
and
them
it starts,
about how... You have to work on a friendship.
Right. And it takes time.
That's right.
And it takes experiencing more than one thing together. You can't just play Fortnite all day and develop a really good friendship. You've got to experience ups and downs of life and doing and hiking and fishing and playing a sport and going to a movie and trying new things and building something. You do all that together. It's all the multifaceted things that we know build strong friendships, not doing one thing.
Right.
So what you just also touched on was like the face-to-face interaction part. So the communication that they have when they have a headset on and they're just texting, I mean, think about that. It lacks all the nonverbal cues that are so critical for them to learn right now. And as an adult, you think, well, how do they not know that? Well, let me tell you, they are not born with this knowledge. You're not born with the ability to read nonverbal cues. You're just not. You have to practice that. And they're not practicing that online on their
right.
video game.
Right.
It's impossible. And we know, Dr. Stacy, you know, there's studies around empathy and how empathy is so much stronger when you are face-to-face with the person, right?
Absolutely.
It's very hard to have empathy for someone you've never seen face-to-face because you can't understand their emotions if you can't see them face-to-face.
Right. Right.
So the next thing right in line with all this is the depth of the friendships, like we were just talking about, this whole superficial relationships is really what they're building. So they're right. building a relationship, but it's very shallow and it is very superficial. I mean, think about it. I'm trying to erase some blind spots here, you know, because I had to erase my own blind spots because I really thought that Adam was building these friends. And I can tell you right now that all his gaming friends in high school, most of them he never met. There was a few of them that were at our school and he did meet them, but you know, they're superficial friends. I mean, well, he's not in touch with them now.
Friendships are relationships that are only that only exist around one thing are never healthy. So if you think about a dating relationship, we've all seen this where, you know, young man and young woman get in a dating relationship and it's only a physical connection. And that's all they do when they spend their time together. Those don't last, right? Wow. Those are not deep relationships. And it's right. the same with kids and friends. If they have something where they only have one thing in common that they do together and that's it, those friendships aren't going to last. So these kids that get on and the only connection they have between each other is getting to the next level on this video game or killing off so-and-so on the, you know, video game, it's not going to last. And so why right. put your time and effort into this type of relationship when you could be building stronger, deeper friendships in person, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's something to sort of remind our kids about because they don't understand that. They think they go on here and they, quote, meet these right. people on the video games and that those are their friends. And I've worked with kids who really think these are their friends. They don't know them.
I know.
You know,
oh my gosh.
And it's like the kids who have a boyfriend or girlfriend that's only through text.
Then
they go to school and they don't even talk to each other.
And they think they're dating.
That's right. And that's so common now. And I giggle, but it's not really funny. But it's
no, like, it's not.
But that's how this is. It's like there's no real relationship there. And so as parents, if we're telling ourselves, but that's where my kid has friendships, these are not friendships.
No.
This is somebody else on the other side of the screen who's just seeking out dopamine, just like your kid is. And it's just coincidental that they're all on there together.
Yes, it's parallel play. So whenever you think about your kids having a friend on a video game, just think of them playing in a sandbox with their little shovel with all the little toddlers around them. I mean, that really nailed it for me. And I'm not trying to be like ugly. I'm just saying that you've got to get this. And even when dads, no offense to dads, when they say they're playing video games with their kids, you know what? That's parallel play too. I mean, it's very different. I don't want to ruffling feathers with that, but it's not the same. I am reminded of all the get-togethers we have and had and continue to have with our boys after we chose to have a game-free home and how different it looks to have boys come over, go outside and do the fire pit, you know, do the marshmallows, play games. I mean, how many nights that we went to bed with their friends all down the basement. Still, they were older. They were in high school and they're playing games and they're laughing and carrying on. And these relationships that they have started building really in fifth and sixth, seventh grade, and they kind of went through their stages of life together. And I remember a couple years ago that Andrew and Evan were talking about their friends. And I mean, they're really good friends and they have very deep friends. And I mean, I'm talking about the kind of friend that if you need something in a crisis, they will show up. And right. that's, you know, one story that I had of my friend whose son was in a different state and he had car trouble and he put out on social media, you know, that he was having car trouble because somebody please pick him, you know, it was midnight, it was on a highway and no one even responded. And he said, you know, they're all on social media. I can see them on here, but no one's responding. So I'm talking about the friendships that will show up in a crisis. And I remember a few years ago, and this is such a good measure. One of the kids came up, one of my boys came up and everybody had left and we were cleaning up the kitchen. And he said, Mom, you know, my friends, you know, the ones that were down there, there was about five or six of them they're really close to. He said, they're going to be in my wedding one day. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my gosh, how cool is that to be in high school and have that depth of a friendship that right. you're already thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to be in my wedding one day.
Right. Yeah.
That was so cool. And that's what you want. Those types of real world friendships to develop. And time, like you just said, spent on gaming reduces the opportunities to cultivate that. So it's not that it's even all bad, right? Even though I think it is, but even if we pretend some of it is good, you are reducing the opportunity to cultivate deeper friendships offline when the more time that you spend on the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I mean, that's the thing I just can't get into people's heads enough, is that this is all about a time exchange.
Yeah.
And if you're spending your time doing that, you're not spending your time doing this. And so we have to make the right choices with our time to do the best we can for their growing and developing brains. And this is a thing about video games that I don't think I realized before I had kids, and kind of seeing this firsthand and also in my clinical practice, is that the more they do it, the more they game, the more they spend time doing that, the more it becomes their pattern after school to come in, drop their bag and pick up their controller.
Yeah.
The more they're going to want to do that.
It so perpetuates itself.
Like, that's right. It's not like you can be like, oh, they're going to go and I'll give them 2 hours and they'll be done.
No.
And there is the exception to that rule, yes. But for the vast majority of these kids, the more they do it, the more they want to do it. And then you're just sort of perpetuating this cycle of wasting time. And so
they grow dependent on it.
And I love to tell this to the kids in my office and say, you know what? It's not your fault. Like, your brain is seeking this out. And so you have now opened Pandora's box of the dopamine dump that comes from video games or social media or whatever it is we're talking about. And so you're going to have to sort of punish your brain a little bit in a way to get it back to a set point, to get it back to normal, to take the homeostasis back to where it should be. And so that's something that we have to remember about this, is that gaming isolates these kids from these real world social opportunities. And the more that happens, the more it's going to happen.
Yeah, the more comfortable they get. Mm-hmm. It becomes their entertainment of choice, which is what I want to bring up. This is a perfect place to bring it up. Kids use screens for self entertainment and not for building social skills. They are being entertained. They're not trying to, oh, let me see how I can find out about my gamer friend if his dad is sick and if he's in the hospital. That's not what they're there for. They're there for self-entertainment. It is not for building social skills. Let's just call it what it is.
Melanie, not that I'm endorsing this, but if there's a parent out here that's listening to this that feels very strongly about, I think it's fine for my kid to play video games for a couple hours a week, make them have a friend over to do that, where they're in the same room together. They're talking to each other. They're looking at each other in the eye. They're making decisions together and talking through what they're doing. Not that I want my kids to be spending their time doing that if they have a friend to go on doing something else. But if you're a parent and you love video games and you feel like that's what you want them to do, make them do it with someone else in the room, another friend there.
But it's like going gambling together. So it's the same exact thing as going to the casino and playing the slots together. So that's exactly what it is. But I agree. It's going to be better if they're physically there with them. You're still not really there all the way. You're better. You know, you've made it a little, you've moved the needle a little bit socially for sure. And my son used to always say, my son that was addicted to video games, he said, Mom, if your son can play, like, you know, he tells parents, if your son can play for 20 minutes and then they get bored and then they want to go hang out with their friend, you know, ride their bike over to their friend's house, they're probably okay. But if they are using their gaming world for their primary source of friendships, they are in big trouble. And this is right out of his mouth. They are in big trouble. The other thing that we just are going to fly through this list, because I jotted all these things down, is that gaming does not naturally allow for you, the mom and dad, to get to know your kids' friends. And this is super important. I finally learned when my boys started having all these kids over the house, I started getting to know their friends. But it's impossible for me to get to know Adam's friends that were online because he didn't even know them, and they were in China. I don't know where they were. You know, and even the ones that went to school, I remember one time I said, Adam, invite your gaming friends over to the house. So this is what they did. They did that. They went down the basement. They all brought their big computers at the time, and they all hooked up to their ear things. And I walked down there. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Nobody's talking. They're still in the same room, but they were still all connected to their headsets. And like, it was so weird. It was very strange. But I just want people to understand that your boys are on there for self-entertainment, which is not all bad. I'm not saying it's all bad all the time, but it's not for building social skills. Trust me on that. And because it's just half social.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of the word I come up with. I don't know what else to call it. You know, every Christmas we have and will continue to have, even though they're in college, the big Christmas vacation movie party at our house. Well, Dr. Stacey, I don't think we can do that online.
No. And it's just like one of my teenage patients said, we were talking about dates and we were talking about like the ideal date, like, you know, for her to go on a date with her boyfriend. And she was talking about how she really disliked going to the movies, because when you go to the movies with your, you know, friends or with your, you know, significant other, you're just sitting there staring at a screen and you're not like interacting and spending time together. And mm-hmm. so it sort of has that half social idea mm-hmm. to it as well. And so the kids recognize this and they get that sense of well-being and closeness and togetherness when they do something that's face-to-face, hands-on, like, you know, and so they recognize that as well.
So virtual is always second best for relationship building, no matter how you slice it. It's just second best. It's not going to be as good and, you know, as the real thing. And age does matter. So when you're older, because you can be arguing with me thinking, well, Melanie, I still stay in touch with all my high school friends. And I think I can be social on Facebook with them. And you can, because you already have relationships with them. Remember, it's good for maintenance, or it can be good for maintenance. I don't even think it's that great for
maintenance. No, I see some of my patients virtually, so online through a secure online platform. But we make every single patient come in first.
Right.
We'll never initiate treatment with patients until they've been into our office, seen who we are, met with us face to face, you know, and then they take those that sensory input, you know, sort of their feeling of meeting us and all that with them when they go to this virtual interaction. And we always encourage them to come in person. Sometimes they just can't. But
right.
One thing I will tell you is I don't have the study in front of me, but I can get it and we can put it in the show notes. If there was a study that was done about virtual interactions, and their whole idea was that if you can't get together in person, it's got to be protective. The scientists thought it's got to be protective to do like FaceTime, communicate through a platform like that. And the study actually showed that it wasn't, that it was actually better to not do that at all than to FaceTime.
Wow.
And so if you think about why that would be, it's because of the time exchange. It's because of what you're doing, you know, how much time, because you know what kids do now, and this is, I'm going off on a separate, you know, discussion here, but they just put their FaceTime on and just set their phone next to them and leave it on for hours with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Just sort of do this kind of like parallel online interactions. But the point being is that virtual is never going to be as good for relationship building as being in person. And of course, there's always reasons you can't. There's a pandemic, there's a snowstorm, you know.
Right.
You don't drive and you can't get somewhere. And so, of course, it's not always going to be possible. But my encouragement to kids and parents is that really you should do what you can to get your kids together in person.
Well, and even during the pandemic, my boys thought of lots of things that they could do with their friends, and they could sit still, you know, 10 feet apart or whatever. They could still go fishing. They rode their bikes like crazy. They still did a lot of stuff. And you just have to be creative. You have to think outside the box, and that's hard to do. And it's super easy for me and you and everybody else as a parent to just go for the quick, easy thing and try to make excuses for it. But no one will ever prove to me that all these virtual interactions are equal to in-person interactions. They are not. It's like JV instead of varsity. That's what we say over here. You know, well, yeah, you can do it. It's JV. It's not varsity. That's what we are trying to raise champions over here, right? That's what we want to do. So let's talk about screen addiction, because is it good to try to build friendships doing an addictive activity? Like, is it good for your kids to, you know, like you say, well, he's smoking pot, but, you know, he's doing it with his friends, so I think it's okay. Or, I mean, seriously, he's right. Going to the strip club, and as long as he's with his friends, you know, he's being social. I mean,
well, there's about a lot of data out there, you know, psychological research about the thing that really determines teenagers' success is who their friends are.
Wow. Yeah.
If you think about yourself as a teenager, I think about myself as a teenager. I can see the time periods where I made bad choices.
Yeah.
The times when I had peer groups that also made bad choices. And so, you know, you want your kids engaging in activities and opportunities with kids that are going to lead them to the right choices.
Yeah.
And so making a friendship through
an addictive activity.
That's right. Is in a sense setting them up for failure.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The other thing I wrote down, and you can verify this or not, but I was doing some research on this, that socially anxious teens will gravitate more toward gaming. That becomes more of a soothing thing for them. Is that so? If they're already socially anxious,
you can sit and control your own world instead of having to worry about anticipating what someone's going to say next and what you're going to say to that. I mean, of course, kids that are anxious would much rather spend time in an online world that they can control than in the real world where things are very unpredictable. But that is perpetuating the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's continuing them down this road of less resilience because yeah. they're not challenging themselves to really, learn how to handle those situations.
So mom and dad, if you're listening and your child has social anxiety, I would say that letting them try to get their social needs met on a video game is probably one of the worst things that you can do, because it's going to perpetuate, like you said, it is addictive. There's persuasive design around it. So it's going to make them crave it more and more and more. And it's going to be harder and harder and harder to get them off. They're always going to want to do that because they're craving low effort, high reward activity, which is the definition of a video game, which leads me to my next point about sharing a hobby that is challenging will develop a friendship bond quicker than a low effort activity. Just like you were saying, going to the movie, sitting there, staring at the thing, like that's kind of low effort, right? So if instead of doing that on a date, you go out on a hike, then, you know, sharing something that's challenging is going to develop that friendship faster. And the reason why it does that is because you're experiencing something new together. You're solving a problem together. You're being innovative together. You're being creative together. And we know that on a video game, you're not being creative because that's already been done for you by the game designer. So don't think that your kid's being creative. They're not. The game designer was. And your kid is just doing the algorithm of whatever the game is telling them to do. But all of this idea around building friendships, doing an addictive, non-creative thing is really stunting our kids'
yes.
ability to develop friendships.
Yes. Yes.
In the gaming world, we're almost done with our list, even though there's a million more things I could add on here. The more research I did on this, we're going to put some research articles on the show notes because we don't have time to go through all that. But the final thing that I'll say that I had on my list, and Dr. Stacey, you may have something else on yours, but I don't believe that sharing interest on a video game, for example, that we're talking about, I don't believe that that motivation transfers over to real life. And what I mean is I feel like it's very closed, like you said before about, okay, if you're gaming with a friend online, what else do they share? What else do you share with that person? There's usually nothing else in real life. And I don't have all the research on this, but I have my personal experience with my son's gamer friends. That's mostly what they did. They didn't go ride bikes. They didn't play baseball. And I know that there are some people listening that say, well, this is just one thing that my son does with his baseball team or does with the basketball team. They play Fortnite together. So that's good. It's still not 100%. It's still not best. But most of the time, there is a limited diversity of social interactions, right? They are only sharing that.
Right.
There's a limited scope, which isn't real. That's not real life. So what else? You know, I think that it is important to say that not all games are the same. I think there are some pro-social games out there. Lord knows, I don't know what they are. And I can tell you that your kid is not going to want to play them, whatever they are. And I'm saying that pretty boldly here. They're more attracted to the more addictive games that are not necessarily pro-social. Now you can argue and say, oh, well, Fortnite, you know, is pro-social. No, it's not. It's not.
I will say that there are some games, you know, if there's, I don't know how to say this without seeming like I'm contradicting myself. Mm-hmm. But for example, there's a Nintendo gaming system called the Wii. And the Wii is like an active system where you play golf or you play tennis or there's like some racing things that you can do. But that's a different type of game. So that's not an online game where you're playing with somebody across the country. And like you're getting your friends together in a group and you're, you know, competing with each other and using the screen as a tool to interact with each other. So it's not the same as going online and playing. You just like there are sports video games. There's like Madden football and there's an NBA one.
Yeah.
And those are a different type of video game, just like Duck Hunt and Q-Bert and, you know, Brawler were. I'm aging myself here, but that's a different type of thing. And so when we talk about video games, we're talking about these interactive, you know, online, you know, Fortnite and even Minecraft and Roblox and these that, you know, a lot of parents think, oh, well, it's just Roblox. Well, that's one of the worst.
Right.
Not to pick on Roblox, but
let's pick on it. I agree with you. We get so many problems in our group.
Same with Minecraft. I mean, kids are making horrible things and, you know, getting, you know, predators are all, and it's just a whole thing. But, you know, there are some technologies that you can use that are video game like that are fun for kids and don't cause all these problems.
Right.
And so Wii would be one if you want to do that, or the sports video games, as long as you're controlling the online aspect of that, because there is this whole trading teams and, you know, all the games,
all the money that's spent in those too,
because they can make money. And so, you know, you've got to really know what your kids are doing.
Yeah.
And there are some pro-social ways to play video games, but let's do that when all the other things aren't an option. You know, like, for example, where I live, when it snows, that's it. You can't leave your house. Like, we have one plow, I think, for the entire county. And, you know, you have to wait till it melts. So after they've played outside and built all the snowmen and they've got frostbite, you know, maybe that's a chance to play the Wii, right? And you get a tennis tournament going or you do something. And so, you know, like at Screen Strong, we're not trying to tell people every technology is bad. I mean, it's not, but you have to really know what your kids are doing.
That's right.
And there are certain ones that in our house, and then for me as a psychiatrist, even if I didn't have kids that I was raising in my own home, I would say that's absolute no. And the ones that allow for the online interaction, in my, you know, professional opinion, are an absolute no.
Right, right. So the tips to wrap up are tips. Just I would say that one tip that I will say that I'm just thinking of right now is that you should be able to look at your kids' friendship time. They should have more time in person than they do on a screen as far as spending time with their friends. It should always be weighted toward in person, that you've got to know what they are doing. This will solve so many of the problems. You've got to know. And then also, you know, the main tip is that offline is where they are going to get their friendship needs met. Online is where they're going to get their addiction needs met. Offline is when they're going to get their friendship needs met. So that means that one tip for you as a mom and dad is that initially here is you're trying to wean them off of this idea that they're spending time with their friends online, you know, wean them off of that. You've got to provide some structure. And I'm not saying you do it forever, but you have to get a fire pit out in the backyard. They're cheap, or you can build one yourself. You have to do some things and then help them get ideas to invite kids over. Let's spend time with this. Invite the family over, have a potluck, invite the kid over for dinner. You have to do some things to structure this. And then before you know it, they'll take off and they'll start to be the social person that they need to be for a healthy life. That's my biggest tip. Dr. Stacy, I'm putting you on the spot. What is your tip for parents?
Well, I think that we have to remember that parenting is not easy. And, you know, a lot of times we feel overwhelmed and our, you know, days are so full and all of that. But we have to remember that it's our job as parents, even on the day when we're the most tired,
yes,
shepherd our children in the right direction. And so, you know, turning their brains over to an activity that's doing more harm than good is not a good idea. Like I've said, I mean, I have four kids. I work, I'm very busy, just like we all are. And I had those days too, where at the end of the day, I think, man, if I could just get these kids to not be asking me so many questions, right? But we have to dig in. We have to dig deep and realize that, like, this is our greatest challenge and our greatest joy is parenting our children. And we have to remind ourselves of that. And the kids are going to fight you about it. They want to play the games. Their brain is pushing to play those games. And once they've done it once they've had that sleepover where they were on the video games for 8 hours straight, they're going to want to do it again. And so you have to really educate them and talk to them and sit your kids down and take the Screen Strong course with them.
Yes.
I mean, seriously, because the kids don't really want to hear it from you, but if they can hear it from somebody else, you know, like, I think it makes a huge difference for them.
Dr. Stacy, thank you so much. That was wonderful. Thank you for sharing. And your homework today is to do what we're saying and to help your kids grow some friends off their video games. And do what you can this week to plan one in-person event over at your house. Offer to drive them somewhere if you need to, if they're not driving yet, of course. Do what you can to do this because they need help with this. And our parent course gives you all sorts of ideas as well. We have the student course and we have the parent course with the solution piece to it. So please check out our courses online. Check out our Connect Plus with the webinars that we have coming up. And if you have any questions for Dr. Stacy or I, you can email them to us at team@screenstrong.org and we will address them on the webinars that are coming up. Remember, we've got your back and we are here to help. So until next time, stand up for your kids and help them find some new in-person friends this week. Stand out from the crowd and stay strong.